your tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
All right, welcome everybody. You ready to have a meeting? All right. While everyone funnels in and takes their seats, I've asked Ryan to come and share a joke with us. Hey, Ryan.
I think I made this one up, so feel free to share it with your friends. Why did the pilgrim go to the AA meeting?
Why?
Because he hit Plymouth Rock bottom.
All right, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Chris. Thank you all for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. Please take a moment to get situated, and please turn off all devices that make noise or that might slash will distract others. Let's all take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. So, as everyone's funneling in, last week we still had some people getting situated while the lights went down, so we're going to take a second. Everyone in the back getting coffee, just kind of make your way to your seats. We're going to take the lights down and start our meditation in just a minute. So thanks everyone for your patience. Oh, and just a quick reminder also with smoking, we want to keep the smoking 75 feet from the doors. We have Boy Scouts and other people in and out of the church, so we want to stay in good standing with the church. So let's make sure where the side of the church and the buckets are, that's where we're staying.
The
Accent the Lord.
right, everybody, please join me in the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's up here, or you can simply repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Ian to come up and read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important for us to know what one is. Ian.
Alcoholic named Ian. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation, Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. Well, it's my privilege to introduce Pat for our sixth session with us. You know, last week was just an amazing experience, and he has a lot of information on what alcoholism is and also the program of action to give us freedom from it. So I'm really excited to hear what he has to share with us tonight. Pat.
Thank you. I'm recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat Rogan. Thanks to the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. For that, I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living in. I absolutely love this program, and I absolutely have a blast in recovery. And I do. I really, really love this program. I love the fellowship. I love everything about it. I love the recovery. I love the fellowship. I love the service. I don't love speaking, but I love the feeling once I've walked through it. You know, it's kind of fifth step-ish. If anybody's ever done their fifth step, that's kind of the feeling that I get from it. There's a feeling of walking through the fear as a fifth step. And this is six steps step week, and
This is where you guys figure out that I'm just another bozo on the bus, you know, that I'm on some kind of damn high horse, that I'm just another broken human being trudging the road here, trying to just do a better each day, and I don't do this thing perfectly, and I shouldn't be, and I don't deserve to be put on any kind of pedestal because I'm up at this podium. You know, I'm just sharing my experience as another broken alcoholic that's found recovery in this fellowship. And before we go into six, I want to share something with you guys about my fifth step that I didn't get to last week. And I shared with you guys last week, and it was probably the most pivotal time in my life was my fifth step that I did with Father Quinn at St. Andrew's Church in Coral Springs. And I truly had an amazing transformation took place that day. There's no doubt. I mean, Bill talks about that white light experience that he had in Towns Hospital. It wasn't that profound, but it was, to me, as profound as something like that. It was an experience. It wasn't an awakening. It was an experience. And I walked away from that experience a different person, a different man. I mean, totally transformed. I mean, I knew I'd never drink or drug again. I knew that God was. You know, and I can't prove that to you, by the way, but it's been proven to me. You know, I knew that a new view of the world came into view. I saw my first sunset that day. You know, I started seeing the trees around me. I started seeing the planet for the beautiful thing that it is, and I never had noticed that stuff. I realized that day that I'd been looking at asphalt and bumpers my whole life, that I had never really looked around and saw the beauty in the world. I was so self-absorbed. And so caught up in my addiction that I just wasn't living life. You know, life was living me. And you talk about unmanageability. No, I wasn't managing any part of my life. I thought I was in control, but there was not one part of my life that I was managing up until that point. And so I walked away from that a new man, absolutely transformed. But I want to be honest with you, and. You know, they talk about on page 75, at the bottom of 75, what we should do once we do that fifth step, and that is to get quiet for an hour. And I have a theory about why he uses an hour, but I'll share that after the meeting if you ask. But, I always wondered, why does Bill say 1 hour? You know, he doesn't usually give us any specific times. It's usually next, now, at once, you know, that kind of stuff. But he gives us a specific time, you know, take 1 hour. And review the work that we've done so far. You know, the first five principles, which he's talking about, the first five steps. You know, and just review the first five. Are we alcoholic? Are we convinced that we're alcoholic? Are we convinced we suffer from the obsession and the allergy? Are we convinced that no human power will solve our problem? Are we convinced that I lack sufficient power to solve the problem? That my willpower is insufficient? You know, have I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God? Did I do the... And here's the thing. We always talk about, was I thorough in four, and did I share everything in five? You know, and I didn't. And I have a confession to say, I didn't. You know, I did the best I could at that time. And that's what I tell my guys and that I sponsor, is you do the best you can at this time. We're going to revisit this. You know, and I don't want the one dirty, nasty thing that you swore you were going to take to your grave and never share with anybody else to stop you from doing four and five. And is that the message of alcoholics? Possibly not. That's me. That's me. Because I'm sitting here 26 years later saying I held something back, right? And had I not done my fourth and fifth step, with what I had done, with what I was capable of doing at that time, that transformation that takes place in Coral Springs never takes place, because I'm afraid of the one dirty, nasty thing that I'm going to take to my grave, so I'm not doing any of it. Yeah. So I did the best I could at that time. Now look, the truth is, if you don't deal with it, it'll deal with you. I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. And I think this idea of being thorough, have I been thorough? Have I held anything back? I think what they're asking is, did we purposely hold anything back? Because we're always going to be remembering more as we go on. I don't know, how many have done a fifth step? You know, how many the next day thought of something else, right? How about maybe 2 weeks later you thought of something else, right? How about 2 years later something really surfaced that you had buried for years? You know, I mean, I'm driving down the road 2 years later and something that really, really pulled on my conscience surfaced. And it was one of those moments where I called my sponsor and said, we need to talk. He goes, yeah, I'll see you Wednesday. I said, no, we need to talk, like now. You know, and it was just one of those things that I wasn't ready to deal with when I did my fourth and fifth step. So the one dirty, nasty thing that I held back. And I believe God puts people in our lives when we're ready. You know, I moved on. One thing I say to my guys once we do the fifth step is welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, welcome to recovery. You are now in. You've laid the foundation, you know, and we talked about that last week. Is it built on rock or is it built on sand? What's going to happen when the winds blow? You know, are you going to be able to lean into it or are you going to lean out? You know, and that's the reference Bill's talking about, making mortar without sand. You know, have we, you know, the biblical reference of have we built our house on rock or we built it on sand? You know, and you know I. Once, in my opinion, once you've done five, you're in, because we're going to see here, we're six and seven is a lifetime process. We're going to see eight and nine, we're going to get started in eight and nine, and we're going to move into 10, 11, and 12. So the rest of them we're going to move into and be working on the rest of our lives, but the first five are the foundation. The first five you have to do to be able to sponsor somebody, right? Because you're never going to finish six and seven, at least in my opinion, you're not going to finish six and seven. Eight and nine, you're going to do the best you can. Some of that stuff's going to go for years before you're able to take care of some of it. You know, some of it you're going to do indirectly. You know. And then 10, 11, and 12 is the design for living that we're given, that we're going to move into. So I believe the first five is, you know, you're in. You're in. You know, it's a commitment now. You're in. So I'm walking around. It took me 5 years to share the one dirty, nasty thing. And it was, you know, it was a kid thing. It was something before, you know, look, I had no guidance as a kid. I was self-will run riot since I was, you know, 7, 8 years old. You know, I had no parental influence or anybody that was guiding me along my little journey. I was always on my own trying to figure things out. And, you know, so there was experimentation, if you will, that took place as a youngster that I felt a lot of guilt. It was sexual. You know, I felt a lot of guilt about, and I wasn't going to share it. I especially wasn't going to share it with you guys. And man, I'm sitting there with a priest, and I can't share it. And this guy, by law, is not allowed to say anything, and I can't share it. Right? So I'm 5 years into the program. I told you guys that I had run into this Tough Love men's group that I was part of, that the Boca Boys Club, spelled with a K, in Deerfield. You know, I mean, men. You know, I don't know where they got the name. But anyways, we lost our meeting place in Deerfield. It used to be at a Barnett Bank on Hillsborough Boulevard. So we lost the meeting place, and the group actually moved to Boca. Right? In the meeting, once we moved to Boca, some other people started attending the meeting. And a guy that we used to call Howard the Elder started attending our meeting. In my mind, an old-timer. You know, I had almost five years at the time. Howard had 15 or something, you know. Those guys, I thought, nobody has that much time. And Howard told his story at the meeting one night and shared my dirty, nasty thing from the podium. You know, and I couldn't believe it, you know, that he had the guts to share what I was afraid to share with a priest. And Howard became my sponsor that night and was my sponsor for the next 10 years, you know, and I was able to unload that thing. So, you know, once again, my suggestion is don't not do it because you're afraid of the one thing. You know, the person that you're going to be able to share that thing will be put in front of you, I believe. And that's what happened for me. So, you know, and by the way, it was starting to deal with me, by the way. If I didn't dealt with it, it would have dealt with me. And, you know, can that take you out? Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if nothing else, it puts a dark cloud over your new life, you know, and you're selling yourself short. You know, you're not getting what you could get out of this program because you're afraid to share something. Which kind of moves us into 6 and 7, which are the two steps that Bill added when he was writing the 12 steps. You know, they were originally working off a 6-step program from the Oxford groups. It's on 263 in Earl Treat's story. He sold himself short, if you ever want to look at them. He talks about using those 6 steps through with Dr. Bob. You know, and it was, you know, the short version is, you know, we admitted we were licked, or we surrendered, inventory, confession, restitution, belief in a dependence upon God, and helpfulness to others. I mean, that was kind of the short version of the 6 steps. And Bill, when he was writing the 12-step, well, when he was writing the directions for the program, which turned out to be the 12 steps, but he's writing the directions for the 12 steps, just thought there was way too much wiggle room there. And at that time in the Oxford groups, the 3rd step was a surrender step. So he pulls the first 2 steps out of William James' Variety of Religious Experiences, which I think I talked about the first week I was here, where he talks about the requirements for a spiritual experience. One of them is facing and admitting that you face an insurmountable obstacle. You know, that's a requirement, that the first step, you know, admitting that this problem is insurmountable. You know, that I'm licked is what their first step was. You know, powerless. And be convinced that no human power will solve the problem, that the solution must come from a spiritual entity. And that's where Bill got the first 2 steps. The surrender step was already there, which was we call it step one, but they were calling it step three. I mean, people came in those days on the 3rd step. You know, they would surrender at upstairs at Dr. Bob's house or at T. Henry Williams' house, and you got sponsored into the meeting. That's kind of where the word sponsor came from. And if they didn't think you surrendered properly, you just didn't go to the meeting. You weren't invited. You know, so there were, you know, some membership requirements back in those days. You know, so I was almost going to go off on a tangent, you know, and I'll make a quick statement. Is those who want to go back to the 1930s, 40s, 50s AA, that's how you got into AA, is that you had to surrender to Jesus Christ before you were allowed to come in the meeting. So when they start talking about 93% success rates and 75% success rates, there was some membership requirements, you know. So as we eliminated membership requirements, naturally our success rates were going to go down. You know, now we're open to everybody. And you could thank Bill Wilson for that, you know, to open this thing up. Actually, you could probably thank Hank Parkhurst and Jim Burwell, the 2 atheists that were influential in writing the book, for allowing us to come to middle and come up with the God of your understanding rather than a specific religious God. And, you know, we always talk about if it was up to Clarence and Bob, it would have probably never left Akron or Cleveland. It would have never left the Midwest, that's for sure. You know, but if it was up to Bob, it would have never left Akron. But Bill Wilson had a big vision, and Bill Wilson wanted to save the planet. And so he brought us all to middle and took us there. But you can see where, you know, he added some get ready steps in restitution. We have to get ready before we make restitution. And, you know, we have to become willing before we ask God to remove the defects. But he adds 6 and 7 in the middle of those steps. And he realizes that there had to be some tools of change in there, that there had to be some steps of change. Because, you know, one of the sayings I love in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's just so true and so simple, that if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? If we always did what we always got, we're always going to get what we always got. You know, and that's the theme behind 6 and 7. We've inventoried and we've confessed our grosser handicaps, and now it's time to change. If we don't change, nothing changes. We're building another inventory. Basically, we're building another 4-step. Yeah. So we're going to inventory and see where my resentments are my problem, or my fear is a problem, and the people that I've harmed are a problem, and then we're not going to do anything about it, and we're just going to build another list. And so this is where we changed. This is why, you know, in 4, we deal with the resentments and the fear, but we don't touch the harms done others, because we don't have any credibility in step 4. We go into 6 and 7, and we have these tools of change, and we demonstrate some change, then we have some credibility to move into 8 and 9. If there is no demonstration, what do our words mean when we go to make amends to people down the road? Nothing. There has to be some demonstration that we've changed. You know? And the shortest steps in the book, well, step for eight, but really the two shortest steps in the big book, are probably the most important steps in the book, right? I think the sixth step goes from six lines in the big book to seven pages in the 12 and 12. You know, it goes from seven lines in the big book on step seven to seven pages in the 12 and 12. You know, 13 years later, Bill thinks maybe we should explain this a little further. You know? But, you know, in my opinion, I mean, why is it so short? Well, because it's pretty simple, isn't it? Right? It is. I mean, like, we've seen what we shouldn't be doing. Now let's start doing what we should be doing. Right? Isn't it that simple? Right? Okay, I'm a liar. I should start telling the truth. Okay, I'm inconsiderate. I should probably start being considerate. Yeah. Oh, I'm selfish and self-centered. Well, I should probably stop being selfish and self-centered. You know? Is it that simple? Yeah. Yeah, it is. It just ain't that damn easy. You know, that's the problem. It's just, it's been a way of life for me for so long. Not just a way of life, it's been survival. It's been survival for so long. I've lived and survived off my defects. I mean, my dishonesty has gotten me what I thought, what I wanted. Yeah. My unselfishness, I mean, if I'm unselfish, who's going to look out for me? My selfishness is, man, our motto in our house was do for yourself before others do unto you, you know? Right? It's just been a way of life for so long. I've exercised those muscles for so long. It's going to be hard to change, you know? But I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it. Thank God. In one of my favorite paragraphs in How It Works, near the end, the next to last page of paragraph, Bill says, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal, are we going to stumble, or are we going to drink? And this is not always, you know. And Bill gives us our humanity. We're human beings. We're flawed. We're broken. All of us. I didn't know that, by the way. I didn't know we all were. Right? Well, not always. We fall short and stumble, not always. If we know what we're doing is wrong and we ask God to take us to better things, then we are surely on the right path. But if we continue to go down a road doing things that we know are wrong, but continue doing them anyway because they're pleasurable, then we're going to drink. And Bill says, and these are facts out of our experience. Yeah. God manifests himself in my heart when I'm following principles, and he doesn't when I'm not. I just block him. I just block God from my life as soon as I'm not living set of principles. Yeah. So it's kind of on me. The problem is there's so much pleasure in those damn instincts. You know, in my mind is, and I believe everything is leading here. I think this whole program has been leading here, has been pyramiding to 6 and 7. And then everything leads back here. You know, 8 and 9, we go out and we try to get right with God's people. And 10, 11, and 12, for me, it's about keeping those in check. It's about keeping those instincts in check. We talked a lot about that in step 3. You know, these instinctual drives, this social instinct, this security instinct, this sex instinct, these instinctual drives that drive me, and they are so pleasurable that I've perverted them to a point where they're offensive to the rest of the world, but I love them. They just give me pleasure. You know, I feel good. Now, is there problems attached to them? Yeah, people push back, I get angry, right? People find out. I'm afraid they're going to find out what I'm doing. I'm afraid they're going to find out who I am. I'm afraid they're going to find out I'm lying. I'm afraid they're going to find out I'm a cheat. So I'm full of fear. And I hurt other people. And God, and we talked about this in the second step, that deep down within every one of us lies the fundamental idea of God. Call it what you want. Call it your conscience. Call it your soul. Call it common sense. But I have it. And when I hurt other people, I feel guilt. And I feel shame and remorse. And I got to drink that away. So somehow I have to bring these instincts in line with where God wanted them to be. That's just a tall order. I want to, I want to. But I feel like I'm, you know, I really feel like I'm in this constant state of spiritual warfare, you know, where I'm battling this dark side and there's this light side, and there's a part of me that really wants to do the right thing, and most of the time I do the right thing. Did I say do? Yeah. I do the right thing. I do the right thing most of the time. But then somebody comes up against one of those instincts where it's either going to cost me my reputation, or it's going to cost me something financial, or it's going to mess with one of my relationships, and I push back. And it's instinctual. I don't know what it is. It's that those muscles are strong. Those muscles are strong. And sometimes it's major stuff, and sometimes it's minor stuff. You know, it could be as stupid as me showing up late for work, and I can't be honest about why I'm late for work. Yeah. What happened? Oh, I caught the train. I didn't catch no damn train. I got up late, you know? But I can't say I got up late. That makes me look stupid, right? What kind of idiot can't get up on time? Set an alarm. That's what you're going to hear, right? Get an alarm clock, for God's sake. What's wrong? You got a phone. Set the phone. Right? I don't want to hear that crap, right? So I caught the train. It's a lie. It's a little lie. It's a lie. But this program has made me aware that it's a lie. There was a time in my life I wouldn't even have cared. It was justifiable. Justifiable lie, right? It's like lies of omission. I didn't lie. I didn't say anything, but I didn't lie. I didn't admit it, but I didn't lie. Hard to overcome. You know, I recognize this program allows me to recognize that, Jesus, you just lied. Yeah. And then I'm up against it again. You know, 3 weeks later, I'm late again. I'm up against it again. And they asked me the same damn question. And I got this conversation going on in my head. It says, you know, last time you lied, you know. And this time I lie again. Caught the bridge. Fuck. Can't help it, man. It's just, I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look like an idiot. But I walk away from that with some guilt, man. I go, damn it. I have a daily reprieve based on my spiritual condition, and I'm a liar. But it's just a little lie. So, but I'm making progress, see? It's getting painful. And really, that's what this is about for me, is making progress, right? The next time I'm up against it, they ask me, why are you late? And I go, I'll say nothing. Because there's a lie about to come out. And I just point. I'm going to do better. I didn't lie. That's progress, man. That's progress right there. I didn't lie. I do that a lot with my wife. When she says, so I go. Progress. One of my guys, one of the people I met early recovery, and I don't know, Pete might know Kenny Kane, but there's a few guys around that know Kenny Kane. He's been around, he had like 37 years. He passed away a couple years ago. And I met Kenny, I had no time. Kenny had like 15 years. And Kenny's at the podium doing a talk on the step six. And he says, step six. He says, well, here's my deal. He says, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me I had to shoplift less. I went, what the hell did he just say? Did he just say he's a shoplifter? He did, in a sense. And I thought, that's blasphemy. How could you be at the podium admitting that you steal? But he stole less than he did when he got here. See, he was making progress in step six. I'm saying this guy's a hypocrite, right? But later on, I mean, and look, I don't know if he was serious or not, but later on I got what he was trying to say, that this is about small steps forward. This is about, you know, the old self dying off a little bit and the new self being reborn moment after moment after moment and just making progress towards perfection. I mean, that's the goal. Knowing we're never going to reach it, but the goal is to be perfect. That's the goal. That's the mark. I'm never going to get there, but in that journey, in trying to get there, I'm going to become a better person each day. Yeah. And it's the same with every area of my life. It's the same with the security instincts. You know, I'm in the service business. Anybody that's in the service business that does work in people's homes and construction, and, you know, I do a lot of, move a lot of heavy stuff around, and just crap happens, man. You know, stuff goes wrong, right? Our motto used to be, I say used to be, still is, that what separates the men from the boys is the guys that can make mistakes and nobody knows it. You know? Like, you could screw up and nobody noticed. You know, you could cover the track. You know, our saying in the aluminum siding business, when I was in the window and siding business up north, was if you screw up one side of the house, screw up all four. Don't let them see one side different than the other one. <You know>? But it just happens. Just stuff goes wrong. And you know when it goes wrong for me the most? Is when I'm bragging. When I'm telling you how good I am, because I am good at what I do. I am. I'm just telling you. I am the best at what I do, at least in Broward County. Okay. And I believe that. With all humility, I believe that. And I'll tell you that. You know, as soon as you start telling me how to do my job, I throw that I'm the best at you, at what I do. Right? And that's when crap seems to fall apart, right about then, when I'm bragging how good I am at what I do. I'll give you a great example, right? I'm in a customer's house. Nobody can do this job, but I know I can, right? I've got 37 years experience down here doing this stuff, right? I can do this. I'll do this job, right? And she starts to tell me what she thinks I should do, and I go, look, I got this. You know, I got it. I know what I'm doing. You had two people come in here already and walk away from this job, said they couldn't do it. I got it. Okay. She does one of these and walks away. I start tapping the cabinet. A piece of wood falls down on the brand new stove, right? Dents the back of the stove. Right? I do one of these, and then I cover it up with my drop cloth, right? I look again. I go, shit, it is dented. No doubt about it, dented. And I go about my job like nothing. I just keep looking at it. And I'm trying to, I take the drop cloth when nobody's looking. I try to straighten it with my hands. You know, like this piece of metal is going to go back to its original form. You know, I'm trying to use some kind of mental telepathy to straighten this piece of freaking metal because this is going to be bad. I just told her how great I am at what I do, and I just damaged a $500 range. Right? Now, the dark side, Vader over here, you know, is saying, just leave. Just leave. Keep it covered. Distract her. Get paid for doing this other job and leave like nothing happened. Seriously, there's this spiritual warfare that goes on. And the other, and there's the light side saying, no, just be honest. Just admit it. Right? But it's coming up against those instincts. It's coming up against my security instinct and my social instinct. Not only am I going to look like an ass, but it's going to cost me $500. Right? And I'm battling. And I wish I could tell you I was only a couple years sober, but I was very sober. Just before I left, and I could have got out of the house. I mean, I was thinking about it. I was thinking about running. And I looked at her and I said, I dented your range. And I walked away. And, you know, I just went outside, you know, and came back in and we talked. And she allowed me to order the parts. I said, can I try ordering the parts for it and try to fix it? So they sent the parts, the wrong parts, three times. Right? So she had had enough. And I'm going to tell you, and I don't know why I lack faith. You know, I don't know why I lack the ability to trust that God will have everything work out. You know, I don't know why my instinctual drives want to protect my finances and my social instinct, my reputation. I don't know why that's so much more important than practicing spiritual principles and just doing the right thing. Those muscles are strong. Those muscles are strong. You know? So I surrender. I'm going to buy you a new range. I go down to the dealer who I contract for. And I said, I need to buy a range for one of your customers. I damaged one of the ranges. And they said, okay, come pick it up at the dock. And I go to the checkout to hand him my credit card. And the store manager comes over and says, we got it. I said, no, this is on me. And I said, I said, look, Pat, you've been working for us since 1991. You have bailed us out more times than we can count. It's our turn to repay the favor. And they gave me the range. You know, just, where's my faith? What is my lack of faith? Why do I lack faith? I have all this proof that if I do the right thing and stay on the right path, that everything's going to be fine. But yet, in those moments, I don't trust. I'm so caught up in what you think of me. I'm so caught up in the financial success. You know, these things seem to be what validates me. You know, I had no idea that spiritual success would have to precede relational or material success. I had no idea that I needed to be right spiritual, and then that stuff would come secondary. I just had no clue. I've been validated forever by that stuff. I need the new car. I need the girl. I need the job. I need that stuff to make me feel good about myself. I need the right watch. You know, I just, something to make me feel good. Something for you to recognize and say, nice watch, you know, nice car, you know, because that just validates me. Why? Why is that what validates me when I have this proof of the unseen? I've had an absolute miracle take place in my life in step five, just before these two steps. I've had an absolute miracle take place in my life. But yet I still doubt. And so the human condition for me is a battle. You know, I'd like to tell you up here that I do this stuff all right, and I don't struggle with this stuff. I struggle with it on a daily basis. You know, you nick a piece of furniture or something like that in somebody's house, I want to go get some grease and touch it up. I don't want to admit to that. You know, I don't want to tell them I hit your furniture and it's a $3,000 table and just let me know how much I owe. That's just not my nature. You know, it's just not. But it better become my nature somewhere down the road. I remember the last time I spoke at this, not at this meeting, but at the other place, I was on my way there, and my stepdaughter was visiting us in her Cadillac, and she parked in my driveway beside me. My wife was parked, she parked behind her, and my truck was on the left. And I don't know where my head was, but I backed out of that driveway, and I smashed the side of her car. You know, I cut the wheel and took out the door, you know. And I'm on my way to speak at an AA meeting, right? I'm out there with a plunger, right? I got rubbing compound, you know. I'm trying to make this dent go away and get my paint off of the damn car. Like, maybe she'll think she did it at a shopping center or something. The only thing I needed was a ski mask, you know. I mean, it's just broken. I amazed myself. I amazed myself. And I left. I'm on my way to speak here. And I left. I'm a freaking mess on my way to speak about spiritual principles. Shit. Self-preservation, above all, self-preservation. What a crock, you know? Relieve me of the bondage of self, you know? Relieve me of the bondage of self. That was the decision, you know? Well, there's some rules I got to follow to be relieved of that bondage. And one of the rules is pick up the damn phone, call your wife, tell her you just hit your daughter's car. You know, I mean, that's just exactly what I did. I called out, I hit your daughter's car, I got to go. Let me know how much I owe, you know? It's just been a way of life for so long. Instinctually, I try to protect. I just want to protect myself. You know? And the same thing happens if you come up against one of my relationships. You know, it's just the satisfaction of those instincts seems so pleasurable until you realize that your life depends on a spiritual reprieve that I've been given here. And until you know, I hit a bottom and I had no way out but to seek God for that solution. And God shows up in my heart, shows up in my life and solves my problem. And then I seem to spit in his face and say, I'm still going to do it my way. You know? And then wonder why I walk in a spiritual desert once in a while. You know? And I do. Those things put me into the desert. You know. And now I know all I got to do is do the right thing to turn around. I forget where I read it. I don't know if it was in Bill's Grapevine articles or what. But it was one of my favorite stories that Bill wrote. But the short of the long story is, you know, Bill talks about living in Vermont and his grandfather. He was growing up with his grandfather. His mother and father split up, divorced and split up, and he was raised by his grandfather who lived in Vermont. And he said, I used to sit at the bottom of Mount Aurelius, the mountain in Vermont, and look up at that mountain and say, my, how magnificent that mountain is. What a, my life's dream, my life's goal is to climb that mountain, you know, and I just can't wait to get started on that goal. And then he says, and then my grandmother showed up with a plate of fudge. He says, and that plate of fudge was so delicious that I forgot all about the mountain. And I chased the fudge of life for the rest of my life, you know. And I get that. I get that story, you know. I had these dreams. I had these goals as a kid. I used to sit there in my transistor radio and listen to the Pirates play, and Richie Hebner was my idol, number 20, and I had a number 20 jersey, and I was going to be a baseball player. And I got, you know, I used to see Roberto Clemente and at Forbes Field, and he used to hand me baseballs, and I just wanted to be the baseball player. That's all my dream. I want to play baseball. And then I tasted the fudge. And it came in a lot of different forms. You know, it came sexually, and then it came in a bottle of Boone's Farm, and then it came in some solid forms, and then some powder. I found a higher powder. And I chased it. I chased that enjoyment. I chased that fudge for 20 years. For 20 years. I lost the dream. I lost everything I wanted to be. You know, and all I wanted to do was satisfy those instinctual drives. That's all I wanted to do. I just want to be liked and accepted, that's all. And I don't care where that is or how that is. I'll do anything, say anything, be anything, just like me, just accept me. You know, I just wanted to have the right car. I just wanted to have the right house. I just wanted to have the right jewelry, you know, because I knew that stuff would get me the right girl. I just knew that's what I needed. I needed that job so I could get that car, so that I could get that girl, and then I would get the fudge. Then I would get the candy and life would be grand and I wouldn't need any more. But that wasn't the deal, was it? Because it was never freaking enough. It was never enough. There was a hole in my soul that could not be satisfied with outside stuff. Yeah. There is no material solution to a spiritual problem. There's no chemical solution to a spiritual problem. Yeah. I was spiritually sick all my life and had no clue. Had no idea what was going on. Yeah. And I still battle those demons now and then. And like I say, I still feel like I'm in this spiritual warfare a lot of times. And most of the times I win. You know, most of the time I go down the right path. Not always. I'd like to tell you I never fall short, but I fall short. Yeah. You know, I have a step that allows me to make amends. And I make less amends than I used to. You know, and I just really, as I walk this path, I just want to be a better person each day. My sponsor turned me on to Saul, who became Paul, probably one of the most broken individuals I've ever read about in the bigger book, you know. And he talks about successful living coming through daily dying. You know, just kill off that old broken self a little bit each day and having the new self built in. I love Romans 7, 8, 9. You know, where he just talks about his brokenness. You know, these were spiritual giants in my mind that speak to their brokenness. You know, what I should do, I do not, and what I should not do, I do. You know, I mean, that's Paul. This guy was on his way to kill the Christians. He was a murderer and has a spiritual experience, has a transformation in the middle of the desert that he never recants. He spends most of the rest of his life in prison writing about that transformation that took place and speaks to how broken he was. Yeah. I didn't know that everybody was broken. I thought I was a misfit. I thought I was the one. I thought I was the one I was the one that was oversexed. I'm the one that needs more. It's not never satisfied with the car. I'm the one who needs all the attention. I thought I was the only one who was broken. When you talk about my journey with God, I thought I was doomed. You know, I thought, Jesus, I mean, everybody's going to heaven but me. I mean, that's what I thought, because the message I got was, if you jump through the hoop, God loves you, and if you don't jump through the hoop, you're going to the fire. Or halfway, purgatory. You know, they had a halfway house thing going on there somewhere. I think that's what that was. You know. I was doomed. Yeah. I didn't know we were all broken. Yeah. Until I got here, you know, and I got engaged in this program, and I saw what this book was talking about. And God has always done that. I mean, and we'll talk about it when we get to 12, but, you know, where my brokenness has become my greatest asset. Where else does that happen but in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Where else do our defects become our greatest assets, right? Where does my shared brokenness allow us to connect so that we can recover together hand in hand? Where else can you do that? Just here, you know? And God has done that all through history. When you look at the history, he's taken the most broken people and used them to fix the broken. You know, how blessed am I, you know, that my defects become my assets? You know, that I could get up here and share my brokenness and get an applause when I'm done, right? I mean, and connect with somebody, because that's our gift, right? I mean, isn't that our gift in alcoholism? Isn't that what we have that nobody else has, is our story? You know, that's what we have that nobody else has. Because when the psychologist or the clergy or the psychiatrist or the doctor tells you they know how you feel, you know they don't. They don't. No, you don't. I know how you feel, son. No, you don't. You do not know how I feel. Yeah. Because they've never taken a drink or a drug against their own better judgment. They don't know what that's like. They've never done things that are pleasurable because and know that they're going to land in prison, or they're going to lose their job, or they're going to lose their relationship. You know, I mean, I've actually deliberately gone down that road and disguised it by saying, I don't care. I don't care. F it. I don't care. Yeah, I care. I care. You're going to go to jail. I don't care. You're going to lose your job. I don't care. Yeah. You know, it wasn't that I didn't care. It was that I couldn't do anything about it. You know. Well, I can do something about this. But, you know, the Bill talks about in the 12 and 12 that this step six, is an attitude. You know, it's an attitude of willingness, right? It's an attitude of wanting to change. I desperately want to change. I desperately want to stop being dishonest. I desperately want to stop being dishonest. I want to stop being selfish. I want to stop being inconsiderate. I desperately want those things. But I'm powerless over these instinctual drives. I'm absolutely powerless. The sex instinct is a driving force. Guys, you know where I'm coming from. You know, it's a driving force. It's all-consuming. I'm powerless over it. That warfare that goes on between what is right and what is pleasurable is a hard thing to overcome at times. Yeah. And we'll talk a lot about this next week in step seven, because a lot of it is about positioning and trust. Right. Because I don't trust. I don't trust that if I position myself properly, that God will do for me what I cannot do for myself. Right? And we'll talk in step seven. Step seven talks about if God could remove this merciless disease that was killing me, this alcohol and drug addiction that I could not stop, if he could do that, then he could remove these. If I'm willing, if I take an attitude of willingness to have them removed, I want them to be removed. The damn things are pleasurable, though. It's a bitch. Some of them I don't want to give up. Some of them talk to me. Nobody will know. Nobody will see you. It's a tough deal. You know, it's tough. These instincts are they're God-given and they're necessary, but they're so damn pleasurable. They're hard to stay away from at times. You know, but Bill talked about those instincts in the third step, where there seems to be no way for us to be rid of them on our own power. There is no way for me to overcome them on my own power. Hence, step seven, right? I can't. He can. You know, so I need to be willing. Am I willing to have not just some of them removed? Am I willing to have them all removed so that I can dance in the sunlight of the Spirit? It's tough. I mean, some behaviors I just have to stay away from. Some things I just have to stay away from. You know, it's a lot about trust, is a lot about positioning. You know, and we'll talk next week about that. I mean, if you want to get rid of the lust issue, you got to stay out of the strip club, dude, you know. You got to stay off the site, man. That's just the way it is. You know, you got to skip that channel. You know what I mean? You got to get out of there because it's powerful. You know, I get it. I do. I get it. But it's I'm powerless over it. You know, only God can help me overcome those defects. You know, I still don't do my own taxes. You know, how is that possible? How is somebody that's been around here as long as I am struggle with my taxes? How can I sit there and not trust that God will take care of me if I'm just honest with my taxes? Because that dinner, surely we mentioned some kind of business at that dinner, you know? I mean, it looks like a write-off to me, you know? Yeah. Yeah, the fuel was for my vacation, but who knew? Who knows? I just put it through the business, you know. I can't do my own taxes. So I give them to an accountant. I just let him deal with it. I don't want to even be part of it. I don't want to be part of that struggle. I don't even want to look at them. I do a printout from my QuickBooks. I stick it in an envelope. I hand it to him. I say, just tell me what I owe or I'm getting back. I don't know. You know, I don't want to deal with it. And he does his thing. He stays within the limits of the law. Maybe he straddles the fence a little. I don't know. You know? But that's not me. I know that. I know this. When I get that letter in the mail from the IRS, my heart don't hit my feet anymore. It used to. It used to. You know, I used to look at that. I wouldn't even open it. I just, like it was hot. You know, I'd set that thing over there. Maybe it'll go away, you know. But I don't have that fear anymore. I'm clear of that. You know, that's why he's coming with me. You know, that's all I know. Thanks for letting me be here tonight.
Thank you, Pat, one more time. All right, now I'd like to introduce Stephanie for our secretary report.
My name is Stephanie. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting and declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Heather to please come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Recovered. I'm Heather. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Heather.
We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please stand up, sir. Okay, folks, let's get this gentleman back to God. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book Study Meeting. For the Big Book Study Meeting, where the Big Book comes alive, fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Big Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back at the display. Also, this weekend, there is the Miami Big Book Workshop Weekend. Please register at miamibigbook.com. There is more information in the back as well. Also coming up on Saturday, February 3rd, AA's Got Talent Show will be starting at 6 p.m., but they are currently looking for talent and volunteers. You can find more information in the back. This weekend, if you're looking to give back in sobriety, this church, First Presbyterian, is looking for volunteers to help with their Happy Thanksgiving 2017. It is in giving that we receive. So this Saturday, if you're not busy, they are looking for people to help pack and sort at 7 a.m. At 8:15, they need greeters. From 10 to 12, they need people to help deliver baskets. And from 10:30 to 1, they need some final help. So everyone is welcome to get involved. Also, as an alcoholic, I know that the holidays can be tough on us, so next Thursday there won't be a meeting here that night. However, feel free to reach out to any of the clubhouses as well as intergroup, connect with people, make friends in the meeting. Just don't be alone on Thanksgiving. There will be meeting-a-thons. Just there's somewhere you can go and people you can be with for the holidays. So we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
We have tonight's session and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study. It's on the third floor here, same building. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting starts at 7:15. Those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close seated with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
Take me higher, yeah. such accumulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
Oh!